with Norris's in and I'm gone. So a couple more things and then I'll be gone. The Revolutionary Coalition is in Santa Cruz. We want to unite all the anarchists, the Marxists, the communists, the socialists, the pan-Africanists, the revolutionaries, the militants, anybody who seeks change. We want to unite. Get involved with us, please, and give us your input, your ideas, and help us build the Revolutionary Coalition to be a more powerful force in this community against tyranny, against domination, against racism, against oppression, and take some effective educational action and effective political action to actually make change. If you want to hook up with us, please call 421-9250. 421-9250. Right now we're organizing three different things, but one thing clearly is we're organizing newsletters to get out to the community with all kinds of information and education. So if people out there want to contribute to that, you don't have to put your name by it. If you want to be anonymous because of your fears, that's fine for now. If you want to do that, cool. Send us letters or information or whatever you want, statements that you want to put on this pamphlet that will be circulated throughout the community. Send it to 847B Riverside Avenue, Santa Cruz, California, 95060. I repeat, the phone number for the Revolutionary Coalition is 421-9250, and the address, if you want to send information or a written article to be put supplemented into this newsletter, the address is 847B Riverside Avenue, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. I love you all. Take good care. Keep up the fight. Keep up the struggle. Keep up your chin up. Get off your knees and stand up to what's right. Take care.
Cool.
How you doing, Robert?
All right. You tell him, Just Man Jim. Man, how can I follow that number? It's going to be difficult, but I can try. I can go into it. And in fact, what I will do, and you are listening to 96.3 FM, in case you didn't know, and for the next 2 hours, and who knows how much longer, it'll be Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. That's a show that talks about your rights and my rights, and mostly the rights of people on the streets and people who are poor. We
have a good show.
Thank you, Jim.
I'll probably see you tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah. We talk about rights, and we talk about homeless rights, houseless rights, roofless rights. We talk about the rights of people. And we have a special guest with us in the studio this morning, who was actually at Taco Bell this morning, unlike so many others who say they're going to show and don't. Actually, we just sort of scooped this man up. Introduce yourself and kind of come up close to the mic.
Hi, I'm Sid. I've been homeless for about 3.5 years. I come from Florida. I was born in Pensacola. I lived there for 20 years, and then I traveled up the East Coast and got my kick to go west, and I went.
We're going to be talking with you at a much greater length, or certainly a greater length than that. First, I want to kind of introduce the show without blasting all the rest of you away. Let you know what we also have some other stuff coming up. We have interviews with Beggar Backer Becky Johnson. We have a special phoned-in report from Candlelight Kim Argula, legendary activist from Food Not Bombs, who's now hiding out in Hawaii, dodging the big waves, I guess, or maybe riding the big waves, who knows. We have a report from Katzenjammer Keith McHenry, a regular to my show. He's a San Francisco Food Not Bombs activist who will be trekking to Fresno this weekend, where the Fresno Food Not Bombs Gathering of the Tribes will be happening. I believe Red Top Robert Flory, our local Food Not Bombs worker, one of many, will be bussing up to Berkeley and then taking a caravan to Berkeley tomorrow to that Fresno Food Not Bombs regional gathering. And we're going to have that report. We're going to have an interesting report from Palo Alto. In Palo Alto, if you read the Chronicle yesterday, you'll know there was an interesting incident that happened where a homeless man or a man on the street with all his possessions was arrested by the police chief. After the police chief apparently tried to throw away his stuff, he stopped the police chief and tried to make a citizen's arrest, and he was trashed himself. I called the cafe where that happened. Actually, it was, I think, a Starbucks. Was that a Starbucks or Noah's Bagelry? The two of them are side by side, apparently, or near each other in Palo Alto on University Avenue. And we have an interview with an employee who didn't think it was exactly as the San Francisco Chronicle reported it. So we've got lots of num-nums happening here. We also have an update from Bedrock Beauvais, the bad news barrister from Berkeley. He's my lawyer up there. He's been fighting my case. I've been trying to escape the clutches of the police for my criminal bagel fondling. You may remember back in 1993, I was arrested with Food Not Bombs in Civic Center Plaza in San Francisco as part of the Matrix sweeps and actually the ongoing campaign against Food Not Bombs, which still hasn't stopped, even under Slick Willie Brown. I was arrested. I was the only one actually taken to trial. I was convicted after a jury trial. I was sentenced to 2 months in jail, and for 2 years that case has been winding its way through the courts. On the last show, I announced that the California Supreme Court had denied me a hearing, and that on the 2nd of April, it looked like it was time to pay the piper and head for the big house. But there may be another reprieve in the offing, and you'll be able to hear that from Barrister Beauvais of Berkeley when we get that segment on. So do stay tuned. We have lots happening here on Broadsides, Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and we're going to roll right into the show. We have little music today, so I encourage you, if you have any songs, it's time for you to call in and let's add some singing on the air, particularly homeless chanties. We're also going to have an update from the sleepout, of course, sleepout at City Hall. In fact, that's what we'll start with. Our ever-ready reporter, Copwatch Bob Duran, a.k.a. Just Kiddin' Skidmark Bob, was roaming around in the wee hours of the morning earlier today, and he ran into four police officers, or was it five, arresting, yes, you got it, sleepers at the sleepout at City Hall on their 28th night. Well, he did a reporting job, apparently, and we're going to play that report right now. We also have, of course, a report from Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, who now apparently will be holding the vigil not by his lonesome, but with reduced forces. He needs more people down there to help him at 809 Center Street across from the library. It's a vigil that goes on 24 hours a day, trying to wake up the city council so that the rest of us can sleep in peace. Wake them up so they will allow changes in their oppressive sleeping deprivation ordinance, which they have had on the books for the last 20 years, and they refuse to change or even consider changing. Mayor Mike Rotkin, Robocop Rotkin, as I call him, he has a great smile on his face, but he lies to homeless people and homeless activists. He lied to me on Tuesday evening when he promised in front of a number of witnesses we would all have adequate time to speak on the issue of the voucher program, which has been in the news a lot, and that's another thing we're going to be discussing, the voucher program, vouchers to go to state parks for 60 homeless people, a plan by Sherry Connable, I call her Closed Door Connable, and Brimstone Barbara Riverwoman, who are now, of course, pinups in the media because of this plan, which I think is actually not a bad plan. We didn't really oppose the plan. We opposed the idea that nothing else should be considered because this plan is now taking all the city council's interest. And also we opposed the dynamics that activists are keeping low profile so they can get these kinds of backdoor deals passed and they don't press for the more basic issue of an end to the sleeping ban. Though it must be said that people like Sherry Connable, who I call Schmoozin' Sherry on occasion and sometimes Closed Door Connable, has not only been holding closed meetings with the mayor to get this plan passed, which I find objectionable. I think it should be open to all people. But I also she must be commended for sleeping out occasionally with the, she's actually been sleeping nearby the vigil, the homeless vigil, on occasion when the police have been doing their depredations of the vigil. And so she's been there to support them. Barbara has been less high profile, less supportive. But again, they are engaged in what is essentially a private charity project for 60 people. 60 homeless people per week will get access to the state parks unless the state parks bureaucrats are able to block it, which remains to be seen. And of course, I certainly support her and the city council even, me and the city council on the same side. Can it be true? Yes, it is. In their attempt to make sure that the state parks bureaucrats don't exclude homeless people from the parks under this plan. So we'll see what happens with that. We got all that coming down the pike. And first, we have this report from the sleepout at City Hall. And I hope that Bob has it queued up properly. Let's see if he does. Well, if hope he does. We're having trouble reaching the substantive part here. We'll have to wait on this one. Maybe I'll be able to find it at a later point. Bob, you didn't cue it up properly. You're a bad boy. Call-in number here is 427-3772. That's 427-FRSC Free Radio, Santa Cruz. And my goodness, my sharp-eyed guest here has showed me that we have another tape, which actually is the proper tape. So let's try again to check the latest arrests at City Hall.
Times. And then this other guy, Pat, was arrested for violating the camping ban just once within 48 hours, and he was released within 3 hours. Although they're holding on to Sean again. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of the jail after I play this tape and see if they can tell me a little bit about him and how he's doing and if he's going to be in there for a while. So stay tuned, and I'm going to play what happened there in front of City Hall early this morning. Must have been about 1:30 in the morning when they came and arrested two people, cited one woman, and then claimed to come back with the health department, took pictures. It was very intimidating, almost arrested yours truly. And I will play that tape for you now. Skidmark Bob, live, and on the scene, or almost live.
Headed west toward City Hall. Where people are sleeping here because they can't afford the luxurious accommodations anywhere else. There are people working here at Sentinel. Now I'm coming in to where people have been living here for a month in violation that they should even exist. 96.3 Skidmark Bob. Santa Cruz. Police has shown up here at City Hall. One, two, three, four, five, six. Five officers. Two sergeants of some sort here.
Sergeant Clark was present.
Waking people who are sleeping here at City Hall.
This is Sean getting arrested now.
Okay, is all the information on your friend?
Yeah. It was the thing that I moved with that from the other side.
Okay, you can
tell me. Yeah. City Hall. People getting tickets now. Now they're asking these people who want to be arrested.
You're listening to a tape. Earlier this morning, the arrests at City Hall, there were two arrests and two tickets given. One man is still in jail, Sean Halimi.
Don't tell him that, man.
He's not been charged with any misdemeanors. He's being held on infractions. Particularly onerous over the weekend because it means he won't be going to a court within 2 days or 3 days as is mandated. He will have to wait until Tuesday, probably, to go to court. And rumor has it this was ordered by Judge Barracuda Barton, local anti-homeless judge.
If people here at City Hall are getting cited and are otherwise arrested for the sin of camping.
people are taking out their previous tickets where they've been arrested to see if they have been arrested within 48 hours.
It's a world full of cops.
Cops joking about stupid cop jokes over there. Handcuffing Sean for sleeping twice within 48 hours.
It's a crime. He's going for that felony camping. Three strikes and you're out, Sean.
We're arresting Sean right now.
We're at City Hall.
There's signs that say end the camping ban. Scott Kennedy is the nonviolent guru. We're a backer of anti-homeless laws in Santa Cruz.
Well, that is the rather slow version of the busts this morning. Usually, you... Uncle Bob, you got to pack some more commentary in there or you put us to sleep. But it is good that you are on the scene. I noticed a couple things from last night. It was very cold last night. Last two nights have been very cold. Weather in San Francisco was predicted to be in the freezing area. So the law making it illegal for people to cover up with bedding, and that's what our Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, 6.36.010B, does, is particularly vicious as the weather drops. And obviously a violation of basic human rights under state, federal, UN, Declaration of Human Rights, state and federal constitutions, ordinary standards of human decency, probably the Geneva Conventions, I mean, you name it. Instead, however, these are just homeless people. They don't count. See, you don't count, big guy. What do you think of that?
I think it sucks. I think it sucks that I don't count because... You know, I've been on my own for 5 years. Three of those years I've been homeless. I've been out. I've been through the basic harassment of being asleep, trying to get some sleep and getting woken up by cops and threatened of tickets and possible jail. I don't really find that right because of the fact all I'm trying to do is rest.
Now, Where have you been most... Your name again is...
Sid.
Sid. Where have you been most of this time, Sid? You say San Francisco, you spent a number of few months there?
Yeah, I spent a number of months off and on in Frisco. Over the last 3 years, I spent probably 18 months in Frisco. And I got harassed three times.
Now, were you indoors most of the time in San Francisco, or were you outside?
No, I was outside, except up to the last month.
So
I got inside.
You got inside the last month. You finally got an SSI check.
Yeah. So you're a disabled person. Yes.
What is your disability?
I'm partially retarded.
Uh-huh.
And physically it handicaps me to deal with people.
Mm-hmm. You find you face much discrimination because of that?
No, not really. I mean, I haven't faced it yet. I just started, you know, this road. I didn't really face much of it in the past because I don't really talk to too many people.
Have you had any kind of steady work in the last 5 years?
No, I haven't been able to get steady work in the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm. And do you attribute that to your disability or to economic conditions, a desire not to work?
I think it's my disability.
Were you working, have you ever been doing any steady work yourself?
Yeah, I have. I worked for about 6 years in the restaurant industry growing up. But over the last 5 years, I broke down. You know, I couldn't complete my job, and I would quit, or I would be fired. So
you eventually were forced into a position where you had to move outdoors and become homeless?
Yeah, that's basically what happened. I quit my job and I became homeless in New York City, and then I lived there on the support system, the GA and food stamps, and then I moved out west and struggled out west panhandling for 3 years.
Any particular towns you found worse than others or better than others? Is there a general anti-homeless sentiment? Well, let's start with the first question.
Well, better than others? No. I mean, each one is about the same. Frisco's kind of uptight. And, you know, if they come down on you, they keep coming down on you. And if they don't, they don't. So it's either you get caught in the crossfire or you get left alone. That's basically how I felt about it.
You actually came to San Francisco during an increased crackdown against the homeless. The Matrix Quality of Life program by Mayor Jordan began in full swing in 1993 in the summer. And that, about what time did you come into San Francisco?
In 92.
Did you notice an intensification of harassment against the homeless after the summer of 93?
Kind of. Felt the tension. I mean, I didn't really see it verbatim, but I felt the tension that it was like they were cracking down and they were kicking people out for having too much belongings and stuff like that, saying you can't be here because, you know, you got pots and pans and stuff like that. And that's basically what I witnessed, you know.
Did you experience anything of that yourself? Did you ever have your possessions taken?
No, I never had my possessions taken. I haven't had that much to have taken.
Backpack has never been seized by the police?
No.
And have you ever been arrested in San Francisco?
For drinking, out too late and in a car, drinking.
Were you screaming at the top of your lungs, or were you disturbing the peace, or were you simply drinking? What was the situation?
It was simply drinking. It was nothing, really. I mean, I spent 24 hours in the can.
Did they stop you because you were molesting other people, or because the police ran across you in a stop, or how did you
ran across us in an alley? Yeah.
And you recently were in San Francisco under somewhat. Well, you were indoors. Were you indoors in one of those hotel hells, as they call them?
Oh yeah, it was definitely a hotel hell, but it was decent.
I've heard that. I mean, there's actually an article.
Oh, decent hell.
Well, I heard some things that those hotel hells, often run by the Patels, that's one of the families that has a large contract with the city and the welfare department in San Francisco, that people have to, in essence, go into these places or give up part of their check. I'm not sure what the story is on that, but that the accommodations are horrible. They're like little jails that they suck big time. There's a story in, looking for it in yesterday's Chronicle, about fire traps.
Fire traps.
Did you read about that?
No, I didn't read about it, but it sounds interesting.
Oh, yeah. Well, they claimed in yesterday's Chronicle that, which I have here somewhere, and I'm trying to dig out, that the hotels that they're sending homeless people to are fire traps. San Francisco homeless put in hotels with bad fire hazards. By William Carlson. And I'll read a little bit of this to you. Maybe you can give me your reaction to this and see if this affected you in any way. This is in yesterday's Chronicle, a story by William Carlson on page 1. San Francisco's Department of Social Services is routinely placing homeless people in residential hotels throughout the city that have fire code violations, according to a Chronicle investigation of fire department records. Those documents show that 20 hotels in the city's emergency shelter program. Of the 20, 8 have been cited for fire code violations that have not been corrected as of February, when the latest fire inspection records were available. Another 8 hotels have not even been inspected by the fire department during the last year, as required by state law. Only 4 of the program's 20 hotels passed fire inspections. The Chronicle reported earlier this week that the fire department had failed to inspect thousands of hotels and apartment houses in the city in recent years. And more than half of the buildings that were inspected last year, at least one fire violation was found. Sorry.
That sucks.
I have to agree. Dorothy Innesman, who runs the city's emergency hotel program, said yesterday she was surprised to learn about the violations in the hotels used by her program and asked to be sent a list of the hotels and the violations immediately. Innesman said her department pulled one South of Market hotel out of the shelter program Tuesday after learning from the Chronicle that the hotel had been cited for 12 fire hazards, ranging from barred escape windows and non-functional exit doors to uncertified sprinkler and alarm systems. So you were staying in a hotel. Could it have been the hotel you were staying in was...
Could have been a fire trap, definitely.
What was the hotel you were staying in?
The West.
The West. Where was that?
It's on Eddy Street.
So, hey, check that one out, Chronicle, in case one of your stringers is down here following the show. Well, read a little bit more of this, because it sounds kind of interesting. We sent inspectors out there immediately and then pulled the hotel from our list, she explained. Innesman said that under a 1993 agreement, the fire department is required to notify her office within 3 days of finding any serious or imminent hazards. I've never heard from them about any of these hotels, she said. She also said she had assumed that the hotels were being inspected by the fire department annually as required by state law. Phone calls to the manager of the fire department's inspection program were not returned yesterday. Under the city's program, about 400 homeless people are placed every week in the 20 listed hotels. Now, is that you? Were you placed in the hotel?
No, I wasn't placed. I rented a room.
You might have been lucky and been in just sort of an independent fire trap.
Yeah, independent fire trap, probably.
Under the city's program, about 400 homeless people are placed every week in the 20 listed hotels. Innesman said that they include medically fragile people who are released from the hospital with nowhere to go and would otherwise be kept in costly hospital beds at San Francisco General Hospital. The Department of Social Services also places 250 homeless people in the hotels each week while their applications for general assistance are being processed. Innesman said that the inspectors from the city's Department of Public Health inspect the hotels monthly and building inspectors check for housing code violations several times a year. If a hotel does not pass the inspection, she said, we stop sending people there until the violations are corrected. If they fail inspections 3 times a year, we will not use that hotel again. Is it safe? She added. That's our bottom line. Sounds like she's at the bottom, all right. One of the 8 hotels on the homeless list that were cited for fire code violations, or of the 8 hotels, rather, most had serious ones, according to fire department inspection records. One of the buildings, the Mission Hotel at 520 South Van Ness, was cited for 4 violations: obstructed exit pathways, rooftop door improperly secured, exit doors non-functional, and no 5-year sprinkler certification. In 1993, the hotel, which is owned by Tribhuvanbhattai Charlie Patel, there's that name again, was cited for so many building code violations that the city pulled out all 60 residents who had been assigned to the hotel while the violations were corrected. Patel owns a number of other residential hotels in the city, one of which was closed after a fire in 1993 that left one resident dead and 13 others injured. The hotel, which was on Folsom Street, had been cited for several code violations, and an administrative hearing had been scheduled for the building on the morning of the fire. Patel could not be reached for comment yesterday, but his attorney, Richard Stratton, said that often when code violations are cited in Patel's hotels, they are corrected within days, and the inspectors do not go back to clear the violations from the records until months later. The Mission Hotel was inspected in September when the 4 fire code violations were recorded. A notice of violation was sent out October 18th, but as of February, none of the violations have been corrected, according to fire department records. An assistant manager at the hotel, who asked not to be identified, said that the sprinkler system was fixed and new sprinkler heads installed within the last month. He is slow, the manager said of the man who leases the hotel from Patel. He won't spend any money until he has to. He's like any businessman. The man said that he was not aware of any other outstanding fire code violations. Randy Shaw, who works at the Tenderloin Housing Clinic, said yesterday that building code inspectors often check for fire code violations in these hotels. They are the most inspected buildings in the city, he said. He said the city should be streamlining its inspection effort and not put any more money into fire department inspections, which often duplicate those conducted by building inspectors. The fire department doesn't do any follow-up anyway, Shaw said, so why have duplication of the bureaucracy? You're listening to Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, that's me, in the studio with Sid from San Francisco on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM on your radio dial. We have call-in lines open, 427-3772, if you want to report any fire traps here in Santa Cruz or problems with hotels. I want to hear about that, if they're discriminating one way or another, if their problems need to be discussed. This is a story in yesterday's San Francisco Chronicle on the front page by William Carlson, San Francisco homeless put in hotels with bad fire hazards. Well, any comment on any of that, Sid?
I think that there's a lot of misconducted business that goes on, and San Francisco being such a big city, that I can see how that gets by and how it happens, but I can't see why they let it happen, because, I mean, that's one of the simplest things. Your buildings, you know where they're at. They're not hiding from you. You know, you should be able to get to your buildings and check it out. And if it doesn't work, then shut it down. That way we cut out the middleman that's taking the loot and not, you know, supplying a safe place. We cut that back. We got more responsible places, more responsible attitudes, and better housing.
Now, what about a safe place? There's been a lot of talk about this. Well, not a lot of talk. I've been reading a lot of newsprint about a transient arrested for killing, I don't know, a dozen homeless people. Well, actually, we have a phone call coming in. We'll discuss. I don't know if you've heard about that. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But let's see what we got in the way of a phone call here.
Hi there. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello, Robert North.
Oh, hey, that sounds like my previous, that's Just Man Jim Costner.
How you doing?
Hey, Jim.
I was wondering if I could just mention about BD's David Dumars case that's coming up on Monday.
Oh, yeah, we talked about that last show. He was a homeless activist who was really in the forefront about 2 years ago and got creamed for it by the police department and the courts, and now he's back again, about to be given a second beating.
Creamed is right. He was actually beaten by the police. His hair was grabbed. He was thrown against the ground. He was sprayed with pepper gas 6 inches from his face. He was then denied medical care in the jail. He couldn't even open his eyes. It was just tremendously painful. And if that wasn't enough, the next day he was standing in the coffee roasting company, and I wasn't aware of this until just recently when I had some conversation with him. He told me this, that the police had come in there the next day and sprayed him again with pepper gas in the eyes.
But this time he ducked.
This time he ducked, but he still got some of it in his eyes, and they also, that gas also got some city workers in the eyes as well.
Who were taken to the hospital, right?
That's right.
But BD, unfortunately, never quite makes it to the hospital. I guess they feel he's a hardy guy.
Yeah, he doesn't need to go to the hospital because he's a resister. Yeah.
So he has a hearing coming up.
This Monday, it could actually turn into a sentencing hearing. Now, it's not been expressed that way, but his feeling is, and his lawyers, defense attorneys, feeling is that it could turn into a sentencing hearing, which would mean that he could be sentenced to 90 days in jail. Now, the man's already been beaten up, sprayed in the face, and all he did was stand up for the homeless people and speak out.
He spoke out about the destruction of a peace vigil across the street by police who were illegally arresting people who never actually were taken to trial or at least never convicted of any of the charges they were arrested for, the one-week Valentine's Day vigil of 1994. Is that what you're referring to?
That's my understanding as well, yes.
Yeah.
And so what he's calling, and people who support him in that cause, they're calling upon everyone and anyone to come down to court at 8 o'clock on Monday morning, and there will be a speak-out, and there will be a rally, and people want to come and speak out, you're welcome to, and as well as we want to fill that courtroom with active supporters, because that's really what influence the judges and his superiors' decision, is that if they feel like certain activists have no support, it's easier for them to go after them. If they feel like going after particular activists will cause more people to get involved in the struggle, they won't.
Well, I think that's good tactics, particularly on such a thing as a sentencing hearing, though I would suspect, and you might want to give his attorney, who I believe is Ed Fry,
that's right,
a call and ask Ed to give us a call to give us some updated information, that they can't really slate a sentencing hearing without giving him notice so he can, for example, have witnesses that he wants to testify appear.
Well, that's what he was telling me, and Ed Fry was saying the same to him, that they would, of course, they would appeal. If it turned into be a sentencing hearing, then they would appeal it, and I don't forget what the legal term is. That they would be able to ask for basically another hearing.
They might seek a continuance, perhaps.
I think that might be the correct terminology. Mm-hmm. They would be able to have another hearing, and they'd be able to bring in new witnesses.
Well, I appreciate that information. What courtroom is that in?
I'm not sure what courtroom it is, but he's asking for people to come down at 8 o'clock in front of the courthouse on Monday morning.
Say that again?
He's asking for people to come down Monday morning at 8 o'clock in front of the courthouse, the court steps of the courthouse.
Okay, so at 8 o'clock, we all show up on Monday. That's April 1st.
That's right.
I'm directing my guest out of where to take a pleasure break. So
oh, okay. Well, I appreciate it. Let me say that, Robert. And keep up the good show. Keep up the good struggle.
All right. Well, listen, thank you, and do show up. I encourage everyone to come to the Speak Out Rally and whatever it is, the hearing for David Dumars, and we'll see what we can do.
All right, great.
And by the way, people want to support David. Who can they call to give him support?
He didn't put a number on the flyer.
They should give a call to 423-HUFF if anybody wants to support David Dumars. I'll forward any numbers. That's 423-4833 if you want to support BD, as we also call him.
That's great of you to do that, Robert.
All right.
All right, take care now.
Thanks, Jim.
And, so things are beginning to hop. I mean, not only is April 1st BD's day in court, it's also going to be, I believe, arraignment day for either the first or the second, probably the second, actually, is arraignment day for Red Top Robert Flory and perhaps Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, two of the lead protesters at the Sleep Out at City Hall vigil against the sleeping ban. And there's going to be a whole bunch of cases. I heard from Dan today that they've hit about 55 to 60 cases now. They're going into court. We have another call coming in.
Hi there. A call from an inmate at Santa Cruz County Jail.
Uh-oh.
This is a collect call from Sean. To accept the charges for this call, please press or dial 9 now.
So... So we now have Sean Alimi from the Santa Cruz County Jail in the lockup. How you doing there, Sean?
Good morning, Robert. How you doing?
So what are you doing in jail there, Sean?
I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with a camping thing in front of the city hall.
Oh, no.
Which is day, 29?
Yeah, it's going into night 29. Day 29 and now night 29. But apparently you'll be having some real sweet accommodations tonight.
Yeah, I guess so. You know, hey. Got a roof over my head tonight, huh?
Well, give us a blow-by-blow what happened last night.
Well, last night, the night before I was cited, they came around last night around 1:30. I was actually up.
This is in front of City Hall at the City Hall sleepout?
Correct. I was in front of City Hall. I was sleeping myself and my other buddy Pat was there and Sunshine was there, a few other people, and the cops came up, approximately six of them. They came up.
Six of them? They must have felt you were a kind of a dangerous adversary, huh?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just like a major criminal.
Did you have your pillow out, ready to use, or?
Yeah, I was ready to whoop them up with some pillows and blankets.
Hey, man.
Just give them a major hug, and they would really have to arrest me.
Yeah, sounds serious.
On a violent basis, you know? Anyway, they were, you know, I got arrested, I believe, by... Junior, I think that's what I was told. And, I guess he doesn't like what I do, and he put the handcuffs pretty tight.
You're talking Sergeant Eric Seeley?
He's not a sergeant. Is this his son or somebody?
Does Sergeant Seeley have a son on the force? I don't know.
Neither do I. I gotta find out who it is exactly, but it's a tall, clean-cut, good-looking guy. By the way, I'm heterosexual, so don't worry about that.
I was hoping. Don't cut short my hopes, big guy.
Anyway, he was arresting me, and he knows what's going on over there. Man, he's the one which every time the cops go by, some of them they give us high, some of them give us peace signs. This guy is like a RoboCop and a half.
So you got tight handcuffs, huh?
Oh, let's put it this way. The officer who brought me in and he booked me at this big county jail, he apologized for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. You mean the deputy who took you over from the officer or the Santa Cruz police officer?
Yeah, they were all there. Actually, it was so tight that there was a red.
You still have red marks on your wrists?
I still have some of the marks, but you know, this is like what is it, 8 hours later?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They didn't feed me, man.
Oh boy.
I'm starving.
Well, maybe you can have Jimmy and. Damon come in with some kind of, or Devin come in with some food. Maybe feed the people can start feeding people in jail.
Yeah, I'm serious. It's hilarious.
So Feed the People is actually a group that you've been working with, putting a lot of energy into for the last 5 or 6 months, right?
Correct.
You heard that after you were jailed, they were threatening to take things away on health code violations, and they would be back with the health department to try to confiscate food and things of that sort. Had you been told that?
Well, that's illegal by them doing that. Maybe I'll ask somebody to bring a car and park it over there. That way they can't do that. It's hilarious.
I, think that, yeah, Dan Hopkins has, should we say, removed the food from the vulnerable area. But that may be, apparently Hopkins reports, and we're going to play his report later. I don't know, have you got access to a radio in there?
Negative.
Too bad. Well, we're going to, he reports later in the show that the cops are planning, they say, according to Sergeant Clark, who is, of course, completely unreliable, but nonetheless, he threatened to step up enforcement in two ways. One by, as I say, calling the health department, and the second way by arresting people on a first offense if he gets clearance from the judge. Arresting people on the first offense of sleeping outside. On the infraction crime. And I noticed, by the way, when I called the jail to find out why you were being jailed and what your bail was, that you are being held on two infraction counts. You are not being held on a misdemeanor charge, which is the usual basis. Yeah, that's the usual basis for putting someone in jail, because that's a misdemeanor and you can jail someone more with more credibility on a misdemeanor. Infractions are supposed to be citable offenses, even if you have lots of them. You know, they're still infractions. They're not misdemeanors. Infractions, you don't get the benefit of a jury trial, you don't get the benefit of a public defender, and so you should not be threatened with jail. That's sort of the trade-off that was made in the California legislature in the 70s when that law was passed. Name of the officer who abused you?
I don't know, but I am going to file a complaint against him. And in the past, there were some other officers that were a little negative towards me, and we talked it out, we worked it out with this one. When I complained that my wrist is hurting and it's too tight, he even forced his finger through so that I can get my finger in there, so I stopped complaining. This one, I will file a complaint against him, mm-hmm. because that is abuse. Again, Clark was coming around making some certain comments about certain Navy SEAL programs and so forth, and he said, what are you lying about this, what are you lying about that, and I said, well, I'll tell you what, I offered you 3-1, you hit me 3 times, I'll give you 1 punch, and that was if he takes off his badge and if he's going to the rink. Mm-hmm. I'm not a violent person, I just want to, you know.
You're just a sporting man.
Yeah, a sporting match. And I'll give him 3 punches for everyone he's going to give me. And I'll do it from respect, you know. But last night I moved the offer to 4-1. For every 4 punches he gives me, I'll give him one.
You're giving him real odds there, Sean.
And I'll give it, you know, I'll give it to him with love. It's not about hate. It's not about anger. It's not about anything like that. It's about respect.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't believe I am one. That's fine. Why doesn't he come here and challenge me? You know, I challenge him. Why doesn't he come take a challenge? It's very plain and simple.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sergeant Clark is more at home kicking homeless people when they're down.
You know, he's the type of person I could see in the future I might have some problems with, because if he doesn't like the homeless people, obviously he might try to cause some problems with 4 feet to people.
Well, actually, back in 1988, he was a man who would kick people on the streets as he'd walk along.
Oh, really?
Who were homeless. Yeah, I mean, I don't know
what he would feel like if let's say somebody like me came around and kicked him.
I don't think he'd like it, and I think, I don't know if he's...
Really?
I don't know if he's still doing it.
Are we supposed to treat people the way we want to be treated?
Now, these are the questions that probe the philosophers, but I certainly hope that somebody shows up on... I guess you'll be coming out on Tuesday? Is that the plan? Or
I have no idea. I'm not even sure if they're going to press charges again, you know, because last time they didn't.
Well, you see, no, this time they will, because this time you're just in on an infraction. For some reason, bail has been set on your infraction, and that is a very strange procedure, and I intend to talk, if I can find her, to Kate Wells, who I guess tried to assist you last time.
Yeah.
But when you get out this time, you got to try to find another attorney, because these attorneys are completely overstressed, and unless we can get some expanded legal help, I'm afraid our cause will be, we'll have to do it all ourselves.
We'll
any messages you want to give out to people who are out here?
Just be patient. Let's just keep the vigil going, and hopefully there are more people will be out there to support. the clock and going to try to arrest people on a logical basis. And again, I'm going back to the fascist days of SS Nazi groups, which if they didn't like something, they would try to dissipate it and they would hurt people and so forth. I mean, why would you want to arrest somebody for freedom of speech, for being out there and trying to lift a cause, lift something which is absolutely a good cause, you know, lift a sleeping man.
By the way, did you had a man who was arrested with you, Pat, right?
Yes.
How did the police treat him?
From what I understand, they treated him okay. There was no problem with him. Somebody
and he has been released.
Yes, he has been released. I was released. I think about I don't know exactly. I was sort of asleep in the other tank because they moved me and they closed me up. Back in Ward A, same place I was last time.
And is everybody happy to see you again up there?
Oh, man, they love it here. It's just like, as a matter of fact, I was just playing dominoes with a couple of the guys.
If you run into any interesting stories about people who have been harassed for poverty crimes, great if you jot down some notes and let us know more about it in the future.
Actually, there's a gentleman here, he's a Santa Cruz PD. I guess there was he was caught with some drugs. Drugs are missing. That's hilarious.
Oh, so he's been arrested?
Yeah, he's been arrested for I guess, having some drugs on him or something like that.
And what's his name?
Actually, Victor. I don't know his last name. Victor was arrested for some drug, having some drugs on him.
The drug war hits home.
Yeah, I guess so.
Right in the heart of the beast.
Yeah, and then he claims that he had a lot more than what the report says. And he's hoping to have the crime dispersed by that, because that's like having.
Well, we're gonna miss you tomorrow, Sean, because we're gonna have this meeting. You know, it was slated for noon here at Cedar Street. We're gonna move it to back down to City Hall at 11 o'clock, and 11 o'clock in the morning on Saturday morning. We're gonna be talking about long range strategies for the sleeping ban. But maybe we can record some of that so you can hear it when you get out.
Yeah, please do, because I would be interested to find out. The same law they had over in Santa Barbara, from what I understand, and they gave a location to the people to, I guess, the beaches or one of the beaches or something, that people could go to sleep. And I don't understand why the same laws couldn't be passed here. From what I hear, it didn't have any side effects on the city. There weren't more people going down there because of
right, it didn't become a magnet, as council members Kennedy and Rotkin and others claim.
The thing is, they're mixing two groups of people. They're mixing the transients, which they are the transients. There's the people, what I like to call them is nomads, the hippie nomads or deadhead nomads or whatever. They come and they stay here for a week or two, and then they move on to another city, and they move on to another city, and they move on to another city. And then what they're forgetting is, there's a base of 3,000 to 5,000 people in the county, city and county of Santa Cruz. They're forgetting about those people, which they need a place to stay. And by not necessarily lifting the ban, at least put a moratorium on it until they do find a location, which there are locations, which I brought it to the city council's attention and some of the people, and they don't want to hear it. They don't want to deal with it. And they'd rather make us wrong for what is right rather than
do what is right.
Yeah, do what is right.
It's to change what is wrong.
Yeah.
Well, that's why you're in jail.
Again, I'm not a political person. I was caught in the system, and I didn't like what was happening. So I'm just holding the grounds for what is my right. If you have a freedom of speech, you should have freedom of sleep. What a concept.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Sean. Anything else you want to add?
Just cheer on and don't make the police officers wrong, even though some of them make a person wrong.
We have an in-guest, an in-studio guest, Sid, who wants to wish you well.
Oh, thank you.
Wish you well, Sean.
I appreciate it, guy.
I hope they don't get you too long there.
Well, we'll see. Normally the kids...
I can. People can. I will do that right as soon as I've hung up.
And have them call the city hall and tell them, if they think the law is bullshit and it's not logical, and the support, you know, what Sean does and the group of people that are out there, you know, Dan Hopkins, Sean. I'm not sure if I should include your name, Robert Norris, because it's so. You know what? You have the greatest intentions, and I love you for it, brother. And let's put Robert Norris. We agree with Robert Norris.
Whoa, watch out, man.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. I've been doing it. I'm gonna be in trouble. I know it. But hey, you know, you bring a lot of attention to what needs to be done. Even though if it's on negative base, so be it. You know, when I was in corporate world, I would take any type of advertising, whether it was a negative or positive.
Well, let me put out that number, and we'll wish you well inside the big house, big guy.
Okay, I appreciate it. Do me a favor, off the air, can you give me Becky's phone number? Because I want her to do a press release.
Sure.
To the radio station. TV
I'll do
station.
That. Hang on, we'll have a moment of dead air now.
Sure. Take it easy.
All right.
I'll call you tomorrow at home if you can. If you're
sure,
there.
Try and reach me.
429-8529.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you can all ignore that last phone number on the air there. So anyway, yeah, that was Sean Alimi, who wants everybody to call the city council, which has a 24-hour hotline. And the hotline is at 429-3550, 429-3550. And what you should do is you should call city council and leave a message. You want to talk to a council member or to Mayor Mike Rotkin, not because he's worth talking to, but because it's worth mounting up pressure on the city hall to let them know that there are many people who do not approve of, A, the sleeping ban, which is the Santa Cruz city law that makes it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night outdoors, and that, B, Santa Cruz police are making bogus arrests under the sleeping ban in order to smash a protest against that ban. Sean has been arrested improperly, I believe, and held on bail on infraction charges, which is unprecedented. He could be arrested on a misdemeanor, but on an infraction? I'm sorry, I don't see that happening. That seems to me to be and not just arrested. He has been arrested and housed, which means put into the jail population without any crime having been committed as far as any conviction. He has not been convicted of any crime. So what is he doing in jail, serving day after day and night after night in jail? They did this last weekend, and he spent 4 days in jail, and the charge was simply dropped. So in essence, he was punished without crime, punishment without charge. It was simply a way of harassing to destroy a First Amendment protest in front of City Hall. That in itself is a significant evil that we have to fight. We have to call Mike Rotkin, 429-3550. We have to call Scott Kennedy. We have to call Catherine Byers, all the same number, 429-3550. End the sleeping ban. Call me back. When is the City Council putting the sleeping ban on the agenda? Why isn't the city council discussing modifying the sleeping ban when there are literally hundreds of people who are facing arrest every night, facing ticketing every night, facing the need to hide in the bushes every night here in Santa Cruz? 429-3550 is the phone number to call if you want to follow the suggestion of Sean Alimi, who's in jail today and will be in jail throughout the weekend, thanks to Mayor Mike Rotkin's friendly policies. Thanks to the friendly policies of Scott Kennedy, who claims he opposes the sleeping ban when he talks to the activists, but then turns around when he talks to the public, has nothing but expressions of contempt and hostility for the activists, and nothing to say against the law that is the reason that the activists are making the complaints. He tries to write off the activists as people who always are ranting and raving and never have enough and so forth, but actually they're just looking for simple, basic human rights, and he doesn't want to confront or deal with that fact. 429-3550. And in case you want to discuss this, we do have an open phone line, and we are at 427-3772 at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM here in Santa Cruz. We may also be having a drop-in today from a number of students from England who are studying homelessness, who actually came by the vigil on Tuesday night when the city council met, and of course we'll be having an update on the city council's meeting. if we can cram all that in here. It depends on whether we have an hour or 2 hours. We're never sure. It depends on whether the next talk show host shows up or not. But, well, let me ask my guest if he has any comments on any of this. Sid, any comments?
Not really. I can't really think of what to say, so.
Well, you're kind of new to this territory. Have you used any of the local services yet? Like the free meal down at River Street?
Yeah, I've used a free meal over at the River Street.
River and Highway 1?
River and Highway 1, yeah. The River Street Shelter.
How was that?
It's good. It's good.
Do you have a locker there? Have you?
No, I haven't been able to get it. I checked on it yesterday, and it's $4 that I don't have right now, but possibly today or tomorrow, and availability of the locker, I'll be able to get one.
You survive by panhandling?
Yes. Right now, until I get my SSI.
I got you. And what's the story about, this is actually a question I was asking you before we got into this more recent set of interviews, but what about violence between homeless people? Have you seen much of that?
No, I've seen arguments. I've seen hella arguments between people just not liking someone that's around them or, you know, just personally going, I don't want you here. But I've never seen a lot of violence or real violence like punching and fighting. So the homeless thing, I mean, we argue and we get mad, but we don't really, like, fight. I can't say we don't, because I know there's people that do and have and still do and will, but I guess it's just patience.
So you haven't been in a fight in quite a while?
No, I haven't.
You know, that's what I was talking about earlier, actually the more extreme end of it, which was a newspaper story is that a homeless man had killed, I don't know, almost a dozen or more other homeless transients in the course of a couple of years in different hobo yards and on trains and so forth. And he confessed to it. My immediate reaction is suspicion that it's manipulated confession and that, you know, this is a police concocted thing. But I don't know. You know, I mean, that's a prejudice I have. I don't know what the facts are in that situation. Anyway,
I don't know.
Neither do I. I'm going to turn now to a series of tapes that I'm going to try to go through because I've got a bunch of interviews which I've been kind of piling up throughout the week, which I think are of interest to our listeners. The first one is of interest particularly to some of our audience. Kim Argula is Candlelight. Kim Argula actually was one of the founders of Food Not Bombs, member of Hungry Women United, a welfare parents support group member, and a member of the Santa Cruz Union of the Homeless when it was active here in Santa Cruz a couple years ago, and it started the meals at the River and Josephine. River and Josephine at the field across from Stapleton's, where there are still Food Not Bombs meals every Saturday and Sunday at 1 o'clock. Kim is. Was responsible for fighting successfully, being a lead member of the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty, which was the group that fought the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail laws back in 1994. And even though we were successful in having them overturned, courts actually overturned one law, although Kennedy and Rotkin came back with another law, which was almost just as bad, sit 10 feet from a shop, go to jail, and that's still on the books. But Kim is a fighter. She just doesn't stop. She fought to keep Food Not Bombs on the mall where it still is, as is Feed the People, down in Pacific Avenue when the merchants wanted to demand that it be moved off, when the farmers market started to pressure her by claiming they would not give her vegetables and they forbade other merchants and farmers at the farmers market to give vegetables and produce to Food Not Bombs. Kim has been falsely accused of vandalism. She was accused of throwing rocks through Coonerty's window. It was Neil Coonerty, formerly mayor, council member. It's still Santa Cruz Bookshop Santa Cruz owner. So I'm about to play this interview, which I will do after this next phone call. That's Kim Argula we're going to be hearing soon.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good morning. How you doing?
Not bad. This sounds like battling Bob LaMonica.
Well, it is Bob. How you doing?
All right, Bob.
Yeah, a couple of plugs here, if I might. There's a free radio benefit Sunday at the Vets Hall.
Oh, yeah, Cream of the Crop, it's called.
And that's very worthy of support. Free Radio Santa Cruz has done an incredible lot to unify a new political front in this town, and it's what's needed, at least as far as many of us are concerned. There can be a serious challenge to the scan dominance in the political scene here in Santa Cruz, and it requires people coming together. And the reason for the meeting on tomorrow of the Santa Cruz People's Council, which is at noon at the demonstration site, is to begin that process, to begin to pull that rising tide together. have, the only thing that people have is numbers. The only way to compete against the money, the West Side money, that is the Santa Cruz Action Network, is through numbers. And when it gets so blatant, when people like Sean, how many times has Sean been locked up in jail now? There are, what, approaching 70 tickets on this demonstration?
There are a total of, I think it's 70-odd tickets, or 60-odd tickets, certainly, for including arrests for the demonstration.
Sure. So the blatancy level should have hit a point now where people can see the commonality, the common points, right? And if what can come out of the next couple of weeks, maybe beginning tomorrow, is this consensus towards action, a lot will be accomplished. If there can be a consensus towards action in a couple of specific issues, and I think, just to put it out from my perspective today, I think most people would agree the sleeping ban has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing is that there needs to be a legal open-air shelter. What there needs to be is innovation and true leadership, and not this look the other way, side rail, demean, ridicule, bureaucratic posturing, which is what we have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I realize that there are some good people who try on the city council, but these are the times for innovation and for action, and not for playing duck and cover. It's time to call it like it is and to come together as people. It's a good attempt. This Santa Cruz People's Council is a good attempt. It's time. It's time for it. This is 1996.
Mm-hmm.
It's time that people at least make the attempt to come together and find some threads of commonality where they can take action on. And I think anyone that wants to look and think seriously about the sleeping ban, you know, if there are problems, if somebody is disturbing the peace, there's all kinds of ways to ticket people for disturbing the peace. We do not need a sleeping ban per se. It's absurd and ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So these are points of focus that hopefully people can come together on in large numbers and build a political coalition that can really do some things.
Well,
and I say directly that the Santa Cruz Action Network can be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
They have held dominance in this town for a couple of decades,
mm-hmm.
And it has become a classic situation of cronyism and patronage.
Well, let's see what happens. And, of course, in case you haven't heard, Bob, we're starting an hour earlier, 11 o'clock at City Hall, with the kind of discussion of long-range strategies of a sleeping ban.
Well, that's great. That's great, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
That's
tomorrow,
that's
on Saturday.
7 o'clock, there's a free radio benefit. All right, and
is it 7 o'clock? Because this poster says "Cream of the Crop Free Radio Santa Cruz Benefit Sunday, March 31st. Doors open at 8:30 p.m.
And Santa Cruz People's Coalition, 12 noon tomorrow at the demonstration in front of City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
A consensus meeting to become politicized and hopefully move towards agreement and action on a handful of issues that are political, that can be directed politically, that are challenges politically,
mm-hmm.
so that that demonstration can no longer be written off, although I'm sure it will be, continue to be attempted to be suppressed and harassed, but it can no longer be so easily written off as being, not collectively pursuing a specific goal.
All right.
So it's a question of tactics and timing. I think it's time.
Good.
And
well,
this is a community thing.
Yeah, you'll be there tomorrow to be
I'll
discussing that.
I'll be there
that.
As a participant.
Alrighty.
All right. So, and you know, one last thing. Free Radio Santa Cruz, which has now survived well over a year, has had such a tremendous impact on bringing the people news that has been ostracized from the mainstream media. Imagine what this town would be like without Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I hear you.
You know, so it's very worthy of support.
All right.
And thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob.
All right.
Bye.
And that was the indefatigable Bob giving us some updates. I think there's a little confusion, though. He said 7 o'clock for the free radio benefit on Sunday night. This poster says 8:30. If anybody has any clarification on that, you might want to give a call, 427-3772. But don't call until I'm finished with this Kim Argula interview, which you're about to hear. Kim Argula.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So what have you been up to?
Well, I just got a 250 motorcycle cross bike.
Cool.
Goes on and off road, and so it's pretty intense terrain here. So it's like really good to have the transportation, and this thing just goes anywhere. And the roads are so you kind of need something like that. So I'm like totally having a blast.
Which island are you on?
on the Big Island.
You're on the Big Island.
Yeah.
And what's the situation? Do you have any stuff about homeless people there? Like what's going on with
It's a totally different. I mean, I could do an interview with you. I could do a little interview with you.
All right, here, hang on. We'll put on the machine.
Okay.
Okay, we're on the line with Kim Argula, a Food Not Bombs activist from Santa Cruz who has taken perhaps a permanent vacation to Hawaii. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I don't know if it's permanent.
We'll see. So you're on the Big Island, and you've been there, what, since November?
December. Yeah.
And, hey, it's the life of coconuts and pineapple, I guess, huh? What are you doing there, anyway?
Well, you probably want to hear about, like, some of the things that are going on that's similar to Santa Cruz here.
Yeah.
And 2 years ago, there was a free radio down south of me, which is kind of the bastion of the sovereignty movement for Native Hawaiians.
Uh-huh.
And at one time, the Native Hawaiian people in the southern part of the Big Island would actually close it off and not allow people to come down there, the tourists.
Wow.
And they were kind of, you know, occupying the whole southern point of the island.
Mm-hmm.
But that's no longer happening. I don't really know the politics around that, but they did have a free radio down there.
Mm-hmm.
And they acquired the equipment through confiscating materials from a military base.
Whoa.
And
no Stephen Denifer throwaways there, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that was kind of their downfall, because that gave the FCC
the basis to move in,
justification to go in and take the equipment back.
So how long?
A lot of the people fled that were involved in that radio station.
So there's no radio station there anymore?
No, but a lot of people are interested in doing it again, and there's a big legal battle in the courts dealing with the sovereignty movement, because the queen that was in power when the U.S. came in, you know, basically had a, they called it the Public Safety Committee, that basically took over the island.
Palace Revolution of some sort.
Right. But see, she immediately rewrote the Constitution as some sort of compromise,
mm-hmm.
but the Public Safety Committee or the United States colonizers didn't recognize it, but it's still legal,
mm-hmm.
As far as all law is concerned. And so they've got a big legal battle in the Supreme Court, which looks like it's going to be successful. And if it did become successful, it would look a lot like common law does in or natural law does in the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure what the ramifications of that would be, but a lot of people doing that want more radios over here, and they want them everywhere. So that's kind of what's happening there.
Is it a different situation generally for people who are living on the streets or living in their vehicles?
Yeah, it's, for one thing, it's so much warmer here that its survival is a lot different, although all the land is either lived on or being developed, or it's lava rock. I mean, it's really rugged terrain. It's really raw land. This island's new land, and it's hard. It's really, really hard to live here, but then again, people completely live differently. It's like second world, so you've got, you know, a lot of people living together, and you just don't see homeless people because it's just, the terrain is completely different. Everybody's spread out. It's more rural.
Hmm.
They're not recognized. I mean, there's a lot of progress that could be made here on homeless rights.
Mm-hmm.
Being a tourist industry island, it's pretty much a big battle.
Are the tourists and the merchants in the position of power that, let's say, they are in Santa Cruz, at least in terms of anti-homeless laws?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. Yep.
Hmm.
And, you know, I don't know, a lot of people here are trying to do cooperatives and you know, live off the land and sell the food from the land and not rely on exports and or imports. But a lot of the corporations are trying to take over. We've got Walmart, you know, Walmart moved in, and they're trying to build more McDonald's and Safeways, and the island's pretty much resisting that, although the development and business have the upper hand on it. But the people who live here, you know, they want to, like, be self-sustaining, and there's a lot of, like, very strong worker solidarity as far as we need to, you know, support ourselves because we're on an island, and if we import everything, you know, it's not gonna take much. Take a couple natural disasters, and we're all gonna be dead. You know, that type of thing.
So what's the employment situation like? Did you have trouble? Are you working right now yourself, or
Yeah, it's very high unemployment. The wages are really low, and the cost of living's really high. It's really hard to survive here. People don't live here because they can't make it. That's one of the major reasons.
Any difference in the way women are treated in Hawaii?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's very much like a male mentality, because it's you got to really know how to... You have to have a lot of the skills that women haven't been socialized to have, mm-hmm. and men aren't completely willing to teach women, although there are a lot of men that are. And I don't know, though, also women and men, they kind of like... They have very distinct roles here, which I guess is sexism.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Hawaii originally a matriarchy back in the 1880s?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's still like that in some ways. I mean, the women are definitely respected incredibly, and they do hold power in a very strange way, very spiritual way, I think. And men are willing to do anything, you know, for women here, it seems.
Oh, so? Very interesting. So you have a whole coterie of slaves now to you, Argula.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that's about. Maybe, like, sexual energy is pretty high here.
I see. Do you have any stories you wish to regale us with?
Well, no.
Not at the moment,
here.
Eh?
Let's say the power of erotica worked well.
Cool. Well, you should know that we're on the 25th day of the sleep out at City Hall here in Santa Cruz to bust the sleeping ban. The ACLU has finally indicated it might get involved, but only if I'm not involved. Sounds like an old story.
Oh, no.
And,
just a person, Robert.
Well, I won the most irritating person award from the Santa Cruz Metro. I got the gold. So,
all right.
So yes. I'm the top. I'm the chief. You probably would have won it had you been in town. But, of course, you left town. And
second, maybe.
But that's, yeah, well, you, Carol Buzenard, I think, was in there at the near the top, too. So, you know, I had some pretty hefty competition I had to deal with.
Take it as a compliment.
Of course, of course.
What about Danner?
Art Danner is...
another person on the street drinking.
He's, uh-oh.
He's drinking.
A drinking person on the street. Well, Danner is, you know, he, of course, was drinking himself in 1988 or 87 when he sideswiped his car and then got away with it. And you know about that whole case. I guess it's not the Catherine Gardner case. It's the other case. But they're doing a second recall movement against Danner, which looks like it's probably not going too far. Danner has tied up Ed Fry's civil suit, which is his suit to make Danner pay back the $40,000 that he used to cover up the Catherine Gardner case and pay her wages in the 1994 election. And that's being challenged in court, although he got some early positive decisions from local judges. It's now going to San Jose, where Danner's got all kinds of high-powered attorneys throwing paper at Ed Fry. So it looks like Ed's getting snowed under, but hey, the cannabis movement is booming. There was a drug war seminar yesterday that was went from 12 to 7 and included speakers of the most articulate, eloquent, and widespread sort. So,
well, that's much needed here in Hawaii, is more that.
Really?
I mean, they have a very similar campaign here to camp. It's called Green Harvest.
Uh-huh.
Kind of strange, huh? They use helicopters, and, I mean, I'm sure they confiscate the stuff and use it for their own means of profit. But, yeah, it's really clamped down here. And I wish I knew the mileage on it, but they've got, like, a lot of helicopters, and they don't even have an emergency rescue helicopter because they can't afford it, but they've got something like 8 helicopters doing green harvest hemp confiscation on an island, and they can't afford.
The drug war is not dead on Hawaii, in other words.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that's happening is, you remember David Dumars, BD's case, the second peace vigil where you were hauled away for sitting in February of 1994?
Yeah.
They're going to attempt to... they're threatening to refile charges against him in April, starting on April 1st, an April Fool's Day trick on the Constitution, so to speak.
Hmm.
So he's been trying to mobilize support around his case, which is sort of an early civil rights case. And we had him on the radio last week talking about how it was that the Santa Cruz City Police and the Santa Cruz City Government and the merchants attempted to crack down on a peaceful vigil that was trying to get the Tobe decision enforced in Santa Cruz.
Right. That's what it was. It's, yeah.
You know, and so that Tobe decision, of course, was the decision in Santa Ana to decriminalize sleeping because it's a basic right to travel, right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, and a right to due process, which of course was turned back by the California Supreme Court this last year. And but we are considering another challenge to the sleeping ban under some attorneys who may consider it. Ray Grunick, the old attorney from, who's not an attorney at the moment, but is a very knowledgeable paralegal, is coming back to town. He will be returning to Santa Cruz, and we're hoping to get his expertise in fighting. We have now 35 to 40 sleeping tickets at the vigil, and we have misdemeanor camping arrests. They've got, I guess, eight to ten misdemeanor camping charges, none of which they'll ever take to trial. They recently held a guy in jail under $500 bail all over the weekend on a misdemeanor camping ticket, and he was just released, or they announced that they were not going to file charges. So what they're doing is they're arresting them on bogus misdemeanor charges and then just not filing on them. But you're familiar with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are they jailing people for 3 days?
They're jailing people for 72 hours. Well, people, I should say.
On infractions, huh?
Well, it's a misdemeanor charge, but when it reaches the court, it's not being filed. It's that misdemeanor camping charge.
Right.
Sleep twice in 48 hours, face a misdemeanor charge. And they're using that to arrest people, confiscate their property. I think they've confiscated Robert Flory's blankets two or three times. As evidence, right? But the cases will never go to court, and so when it comes time, he'll just have to be a month without his bedding, and that's the approach they're using.
Hmm.
But I'm a little under the weather here today, and I'm going to have to hustle off to the station. Anything you want to say to your many fans and opponents, and any special message for Neil Coonerty, perhaps?
I just love everybody and miss everybody a lot. And I'll be back, and I'm really having a good time, so people should be happy for me.
Yeah, indeed.
And so should Neil Coonerty.
Well, Neil, as you know, is one of your kind of best and most devoted fans who actually catapulted you into fame in the newspapers by accusing you of throwing rocks through his window in so many words at some point.
Yeah, big liar.
Yeah, well, Neil is no longer on the council, but we do have Kennedy, who has called me publicly a liar and a coward repeatedly. So I'm getting all these insults, but...
Coward? Gosh.
Yes, I'm a well-known coward.
That's far from the truth.
Well, listen, Kim, thank you for, this long-distance call, and, hey... which I'm glad to receive, and maybe you'll call back on a regular basis in case you got more info on what's happening with harassment of the homeless and housing situations and so forth and civil rights issues in Hawaii.
Aloha.
Aloha. Bye bye.
Bye.
And that was Candlelight Kim Argula talking to yours truly in a long distance call, not from the radio station, I would like to add, but from another telephone for all you bill watchers here at the Free Radio Santa Cruz. Now is the time for those call-ins at 427-3772. Phone lines are open. And until we get them, I'm going to save my voice and use some tape and kind of bring you up to date on what's been going on at the vigil. Here's a day ago at the vigil at City Hall. Here's Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, or perhaps it's Red Top Robert Flory. Anyway, it's one of those sleep criminals. They all look alike to me.
Well, it's March 27th, 1996. It's about 2:15. We're in front of the City Hall sleepout in the afternoon, and I'm with the bare-chested and burly Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins. The vicious Caleb is wandering by, and somewhere off in the corner sleeping is, who's this?
Robert Flory.
Robert Flory, for heaven's sakes. So you say that this morning there were about 10 to 12 people, well, Sean told me there were 10 to 12 people who slept here throughout the night.
Right, right.
Sean Alamy, who's also one of your co-hosts here at the Santa Cruz Sleep Out at City Hall Gala Extravaganza.
Right.
But there were three or four people present when an officer showed up. Well, what happened?
Yeah, there was about at least five people still sleeping when the officer walked up. I don't know what his name was. He was at a distance from me.
What time was it?
I have it down on, I think it was something like about 7:18 or something like that. Maybe a little earlier than that, maybe about 7 o'clock. And, he walked up and he looked at all the people sleeping and he says, you sure these people aren't setting up any campsites here? And wake them up in case they are setting up any campsites, right?
Is that what he said?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You heard him say that?
Oh, yeah, I heard that part, but he was at a distance from me. And he just turned around and walked away.
I see. So
So when we get to court, we can show the inconsistency and why was I getting a ticket and others weren't, especially when there was a girl one night sleeping right next to me and they never gave her a ticket. She stayed in a sleeping bag.
Who was sleeping, in fact, when the officer arrived?
Let's see. Sean, I believe, was sleeping. You were sleeping too, weren't you? No?
Anybody else sleeping?
I can't remember because it's so foggy, you know.
Round up people's names. Was that
I got the names on my recorder.
Oh, good. I guess you got that.
As a matter of fact, I can get you right now.
All right. Edward Schroeder was a witness to this thing that happened at 6:15 this morning. Here about 1274 Santa Cruz, 95061. The Clary and Sandy were in sleeping bags. Sunshine was also in a sleeping bag. Sean was in a sleeping bag. Hey, we got everybody in a sleeping bag.
And it's Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're listening to Highlights from the Sleepout. We have an incoming phone call we're about to answer. So again, the intensification in the last 2 days of arrests. There were 8 tickets night before last. There were 2 tickets and 2 arrests last night. And here's our caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Yeah, I didn't especially want to get back on the air, but I thought it might be fun to define the terms progressive and liberal, which are bandied about by certain people in this town.
It might be fun, but I can't do it right now.
Well, okay. At some point in time.
All right, definitely.
It might be nice to focus on how these terms are used by people to essentially cover up their cowardice.
I think actually that's a worthy topic, but I've kind of got this tapes backed up back to back, Bob.
You bet, Robert. Take care.
All right.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Topics like that will probably be running around loose on the rampage tomorrow at City Hall, or actually any time at City Hall is a good time to go down to find a kind of a liberated spirit, people giving each other back rubs, people talking to each other, people sharing food, people sharing the risk of arrest if they're there late at night and they're in their sleeping bags or covered up with blankets. That's 809 Center Street, right across from the main library. There's no place to call anymore. You cannot get in because the phone has been removed, though I have been told by Catherine Byers, council member at large, or at small, as I sometimes call her, and I may be giving her a call on this show to get the update on the changes in the sleeping ban, that the phone is only out for about 10 days or a week. And I called the phone company. The phone company indeed confirms the phone is supposed to be coming back in by April 10th. So if the vigilers there can hold out until the 10th, there may or may not be a new phone in the place of the one that was pulled out. Now, the claim was, Catherine Byers claimed the phone didn't work, but we used the phone that very night, and we saw nothing wrong with it, and it seems unlikely the phone would be working and then suddenly be gone hours later, particularly since the order for the phone to be pulled came from the police department. That we did find out from the phone company. This is the payphone at the City Hall Sleepout, the City Council payphone, which has been removed since, I guess, Monday or Tuesday, something like that. My suggestion, ever the paranoid, is that it was an attempt to make communications with the peace vigil more difficult. But who knows? Maybe they have so little interest in the peace vigil and so much contempt for it that they don't care whether we have a phone or not. This is simply completely unrelated and merely coincidental. Could be. So, what have I got here for you? Well, I've got some more interviews, kind of a running log of the last few days of the peace vigil, I should say the sleeping vigil at City Hall. And the reason I call it the peace vigil is because Robert Flory used to do what he called peace vigils downtown on the Mall, which he essentially concerned himself with subjects of civil rights, which also concerned things like the sleeping ban. So these things all kind of melt together. But the City Hall sleepout is, in fact, a sleep out to establish a campground and to end the sleeping ban. And I suppose there are other topics too, broader topics of civil rights that are concerned, other discrimination issues that come up. But the big issue we've continued to bring to City Council again and again is, how about modifying the sleeping ban to make it legal for people to sleep without fear of arrest somewhere? And that issue has never been addressed. Although there's been a lot of paper in the newspapers recently, and perhaps I should take this moment to explore that a little bit around this proposal for vouchers for the state campgrounds. The Barber River Woman Sherry Connable program to send campers out to the state parks, which you have to admit
certainly is better accommodations in the armory, certainly is better accommodations in the streets, certainly is better accommodations than some shut-in program where you have to be in, like, the River Street shelter and at some obscenely early hour and can't participate late at night in other functions. It's an open-air situation. You set up your own tent. You can have your own company, presumably, although I think that the Cynthia Matthews on the city council Tuesday night was trying to make it more rigid in terms of entrance requirements and so forth, and I will say that my impression of Barb Riverwoman and Sherry Connell is that they are certainly better in terms of more liberal managers than any existing bureaucrats would be, and they simply want to facilitate homeless people having an opportunity to go to state parks. And indeed, I'm very glad to see the issue getting into the papers, because the more, I guess, controversy is generated by this issue, the more focus eventually we get on the what appears to be peripheral or secondary, but actually is the primary issue, which is the right of homeless people to sleep at night when there is no legal place for them to sleep in Santa Cruz and in other cities throughout the state. I mean, Scott Kennedy has constantly gone after me and other activists by claiming, why are you pestering Santa Cruz? Well, the answer is we live in Santa Cruz, and if we lived in Capitola, we'd be pestering Capitola. We wouldn't be running into Santa Cruz, but we live in Santa Cruz, Scott. But, you know, it is also true that other cities like Capitola have bans on camping, though none as onerous as the camping ban in Santa Cruz. There are none that are quite that bad. And I think that the reason I say that is because Santa Cruz is one of the only cities that bans camping on most private property. The only place you can sleep on private property is in a fenced-in side yard, a backyard, or as part of the ISSP program, three vehicles on a church parking lot. So Santa Cruz has an unusual situation there. Now, I was going to play more of this Daniel Hopkins interview, but I'm afraid that the live Daniel Hopkins has lurched into the studio with an anonymous figure who does not wish to be identified. We, however, will call the police as soon as he's out of earshot and sick them on him. Hey, Dan.
Hi, how you doing? I just got back from the vigil over there at City Hall, and I got a little news flash for you, and I'd like my friend to give you the news flash. Okay, it's kind of good news, actually.
Hello, everyone out there. Just wanted to give a little idea of what happened today at the City Hall. There was three of us there today, and names are not important at this point. We were approached from the rear by a large group of youths, young children, members of two classes, class 40 and 41, I believe, from Santa Cruz Gardens School, who proceeded to walk up to us and show us that their president and vice president had something to give to us, president of the class. The boy held a manila envelope containing something at the moment he began to read what was on the front of the envelope, telling us that we, the class, the 40th and 41st members of the class, had gathered a certain amount of money to give to the homeless people to help them to cover their lunches, and offered this to us afterwards, and at the bottom of the page it said, love and best wishes. The amount was $51.77 that was gathered out of tax dollars, it says on the envelope. I'm not exactly sure where it came from. The point is, I announced to them that it would go to help feed the members of the people who are helping to protest the camping ban at the time, explained to them a little bit about the fact that there was somewhere between 500 to 1,500 people every night in the city of Santa Cruz who illegally sleep, who can be cited if officers choose to do so. The woman proceeded to try to remind me to make sure that the money would go for the purpose of getting lunch for for any and all homeless people, whether they be of the protest or not. I also informed them at that time that this morning we were the members of the protest, I should say, some of the members of the protest were threatened by violations of health regulations for distributing and having free food on site at the protest. And then I informed the teachers and the other members of the class of this as well, and that, you know, the money would go to feed people, except for the fact that they're even using that to try to persecute us nowadays with this protest going on. Thank you.
You're welcome. From the mouths of babes, I should say from the pockets of babes. My goodness, you're robbing the kids' lunch money. This is scandalous. I'm going to call Scott Kennedy and see what he thinks of this. Incredible. Well, perhaps you would like to call him and talk to him on the phone. I find Scott a difficult man to stomach. Scott's last comment to me was, "You are a liar and a coward," is what he tells me. Actually, he... I think he, I, that really was, we did, I don't think we had much of an exchange other than that. Anyway, Scott, you're welcome to call into the show. The mic is open if you want to get into some kind of debate, discuss your position. You go to KZSC, but you won't appear on a station where you have real critics. I mean, that doesn't show too much backbone, guy. You can do it. I know you're a tough debater. If you can stand down Eddie Hicks, you can stand down anybody. So you should get on the show. I am going to try to call Catherine Byers, however, because I think